Hello and welcome to the Spiritual School Bus. I'm Mandy Hecht. I'm an ordained minister with the Canadian Baptist of Western Canada, and I drive a school bus. In Baptist churches and on the bus, it seems like everyone wants to sit in the back. You, however, are invited to take a front row seat on the Spiritual School Bus.
This week's scripture reading is taken from Mark chapter 5, verses 21 to 43. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders, named Jairus, came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately, her bleeding stopped and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you ask, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion, with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. May the Lord add his blessing to the reading of his word.
So our story today, well, both of them actually, because it's a story within a story. Our stories today take place somewhere between fear and faith. The story begins as a man named Jairus approached Jesus. Now, Jairus is not accustomed to feeling fear. Jairus is the kind of man who usually walks through the world with confidence. He's the respected leader of the local synagogue. And he is, well, he's a he, which carries its own privilege that is elusive and yet real. We can assume that most people in the crowd that day know his name, and his name carries weight. He's known and he's respected. He's used to getting his way and to getting the attention he needs if he ever needs anything at all. He's good at solving any challenges that come up in a day because that's what Jairus does. He's a leader, and leaders, after all, are well-versed in knowing how to keep everything together. Jairus is confident and competent, looked up to, respected, and he rarely has to feel fear because he's able to move through the world with ease. He's able to look after the things that need looking after. He's able to solve most of his problems with his wealth or his reputation or his wisdom. We can even imagine, perhaps, that Jairus gets to Jesus nearly as soon as Jesus gets off that boat, fresh off his excursion to the other side of the lake, first, before anyone or anything else does, because Jairus is the kind of person that everyone else, including the crowds that have gathered, make way for. Jairus' very presence allows him to part the crowd like a curtain, and he can make his way directly to Jesus. Maybe that is because he is the kind of person the crowds make way for, or maybe it's because, as the respected leader of the local synagogue, everyone in that crowd knows Jairus' deep need on that particular day, and they make way for him. Or maybe it's a little bit of both. But when Jairus approaches Jesus, we see, for the first time in a long time, that Jairus, the one with many resources that he can draw upon his own problems, to solve his own problems, may be beginning to be afraid. On that day, he may be afraid because of that great leveler that the world can throw at us, our health or lack thereof. While the well-resourced can avoid many suffering in this world, much suffering in this world, when illness strikes, it often doesn't take into account your name or your position or your bank account or how many people love and care about you. When Jairus' daughter becomes ill, he was perhaps able to afford the best physicians to come and evaluate her, but now things have progressed to a point where they are stumped. They're unable to help, and everyone, Jairus included, can do nothing but helplessly watch as his daughter suffers and grows worse, her life ebbing away day by day, hour by hour. So with nothing else left to do, no recourse of his own left to try, Jairus decides to do the one thing that is left to him. Although the concept of begging for help from another person is not something that Jairus is very familiar with, his world is one in which people usually come to him to ask a favor or to get some aid. He has no other option. And so he finds Jesus. He falls at Jesus' feet and he pleads with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." The man who is not accustomed to feeling fear may be afraid because he's encountered something that is finally out of his control. But even though he's afraid for the first time in recent memory, he summons up enough faith to go, to seek out Jesus, and to plead with Jesus to heal his daughter. And Jesus, moved as he is by human suffering, goes with Jairus to his house. Though Jairus hovers between fear and faith, Jairus' faith is not misplaced. And now Jesus is on his way to help the little girl. However, there is someone else in the crowd that day who is also hovering somewhere between faith and fear. Now, this person's relationship with fear is different than Jairus's. This woman has felt her life draining out of her day after day, week after week, year after year, and she is now in her 12th year of suffering, and things are not getting any better for her. In fact, they're getting worse. This woman has a lot to fear. She's not used to getting her own way. She's not used to being able to solve her own problems with the resources that she possesses. In fact, there are a lot of ways in which this woman is the opposite of Jairus. Jairus is one of the few characters that gets a name in the Gospel of Mark. This woman's name is not one that we get to know. Jairus is likely well off. This woman is poor. And we get the little detail that she spent any and all resources that were hers trying to get to the bottom of the medical mystery that has afflicted her for all these long years. She has no one to advocate for her, to help her, to find Jesus and ask him for the healing. On her own, she has very little power. Jairus' daughter has an acute illness that is taking her life quickly, and this woman has been suffering for years. And of course, she is a she, which carries its own special barriers in this world, which are elusive and yet very real. The crowds did not part for this woman to make her way to Jesus. And while Jairus had every right to be out in the crowd that day, even every right to be seeking Jesus, both his name and his need were well known to that crowd, this woman probably, by most accounts, should not have been out in the crowd that day. Her illness was such that it made her what is known as unclean. That's not to say sinful, but it was a state that was at best inconvenient, for a person would have to purify themselves if they came into contact with her in the crowd in order to take part again in religious activities. So it's quite possible that the folks would have been angry or upset that she was out in that kind of crushing crowd that day because of the way that uncleanness in that world worked. It was like getting dirt on your hands. If you touch something else that's not dirty, you leave your dirty fingerprints on all those things that were once clean. And Jairus, as the leader of the local synagogue, was a religious insider, whereas this woman would have been a religious outsider for as long as her illness had afflicted her, because she was unable to bring this sickness into the temple. So this woman has a lot to fear. She spent so many years with this illness that only ever gets worse and never better. And every single time she's tried to seek help for it, those people who should have been able to help her, physicians and the like, she has only ever gotten poorer and more ill. Most commentaries that I read pointed out that people in her position, those at the bottom of the social ladder, those with the fewest resources, they were the ones who were actually the most at risk for being taken in and taken advantage by those who were supposed to be healers, but just really wanted to see how much money they could extract from the desperate. She didn't have a family member to speak up for her, to get to the healer Jesus, to come to her house as the little girl did. She probably shouldn't have been out in the crowd that day, and so there may have been repercussions for her if people found out. However, for all that this woman had to fear, she too hovers in that place between faith and fear. And somehow, she let her faith in Jesus' ability to heal win out. She was so convinced that Jesus could heal her, she didn't even approach him directly, but instead came up behind him in the crowd to touch the edge of his robe, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Somehow, even though this woman is accustomed to fear, she let her faith win out. She braved that crushing crowd and seized the edge of Jesus' robe. Now, the Gospel of Mark is the shortest of all the Gospels. At just 16 chapters, it's shorter than even some of the letters of Paul. The Gospels of Matthew and Luke cover a lot of the same material as the Gospel of Mark, but they often add extra details to Mark's spare account, because the way the Gospel of Mark is written maximizes action and minimizes everything else, like long sections of teaching or passages that describe people and places. But in this story, Mark actually outdoes both Luke and Matthew, who both cover this story as well, in how he describes the scene and the people. In fact, this story is nearly three times longer in the Gospel of Mark than it is when Matthew tells this story. The fact that Mark varies his usually sparsely detailed account for this particular story and for these three characters shows that we should perhaps pay some attention to the way he tells the story. Here are the verses that describe the woman. And a woman was there who'd been subject to bleeding for 12 years, period. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse, period. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, period. Now this is translated in this way with three distinct sentences for ease of understanding in English, but it actually obscures something important. Here are the words of one commentator who thinks that verses 25 through 27, which I just read to you, in this story ought to be one long sentence rather than chopped up into three separate ones as it is in our translation. He writes this: "Yes, this unfortunate woman did have a flow of blood for 12 years, but to put that description into a self-standing sentence is to define her in a singular way, which is not actually how Mark is telling the story. She's been living with a flow of blood for 12 years, but she also suffered at the hands of physicians. She spent all her money to address it, and she also did not benefit but went from bad to worse. And she also heard about Jesus and went into this pressing throng of people to grab his garment. This woman is as defined by her determination as she is by her suffering. That is the value of respecting Mark's string of participles and being patient for the main verb. After all this woman suffered and did, she still grabbed Jesus' garment." In the way that Mark tells this story, which is rather uncharacteristic for him, we see that little detail which is so key to understanding this story. After all the woman had been through, after all she had suffered, she is defined as much by her determination as by her suffering. After all that she's been through and everything she has to fear, she still goes out in that crowd, she still takes the chance, she still acts with enough faith to grab the edge of Jesus' garment. The woman who has everything to fear, the woman who could probably not be blamed if she just suffered without hope after everything else that has happened to her, she still acts out of her faith, not her fear. And maybe that's all we need to hear right there. I know there is a lot of fear in this world. I know that suffering is real. And I know that suffering is sometimes not just real, but it is ongoing, and it feels so very hopeless. Suffering can be isolating. It is hard. Sometimes we try everything we can think of. We knock on every other door that's available for help and nothing ever works. And no one really could blame us if we just threw up our hands in despair and gave up. If we, to borrow a phrase from the tale of another well-known biblical sufferer, would simply curse God and die. If we let our fear that there is no help out there, that nothing will ever change, that nothing will ever get better carry the day, If we act out of our fear that lurks around every corner, that grows with every passing day, where things are getting worse and not better. But maybe we could borrow the courage of this woman, who had everything to fear, and yet notwithstanding this fear, still went out in the crowd that day and acted on her faith, who approached Jesus from behind because her faith in him was such that she believed it really only would take a touch and she would be healed. Now, this woman is as defined by her determination as she is by her suffering, but we should not forget that little fact that she did approach Jesus from behind. So it's quite possible that the faith that she possessed was not actually very great. Maybe she only had the tiniest amount of faith, a mustard seeds amount. Maybe she approached from behind for a touch of Jesus' cloak because asking for healing to Jesus' face would have been too hard, because it would have simply been too much for her to have Jesus turn her away, or worse, to have Jesus try to heal her, like all the physicians that came before him, but to have that fail too. Maybe her fear is still very real and she is clinging only to the smallest scrap of faith that she can muster, and that she thinks if at least this doesn't work, she can slink back and melt into the crowd and no one would know what she had done. It's entirely possible that the woman's faith is small, weak, fragile enough to break with one harsh word or dirty look, but her faith is enough because this day, the day after all the other days when her fears were confirmed, this was the one day when her faith paid off. This day, the woman snuck up behind Jesus in the crowd. That was the day she was finally healed. Maybe this woman's act of faith, however small, in the face of her great fear, can inspire us to do the same. Now, her healing was instantaneous. She knew it at once. But she doesn't only receive healing that day. She's not actually allowed to remain anonymous, but Jesus immediately begins to look around and find out about the power that he has sensed that has gone out from him. Jesus has some sort of power, it seems, that he could feel, and he could feel when it left him involuntarily as much as he can sense it when he offers that power freely. But I wonder if Jesus has a detector for someone's faith as much as he has for the healing power that he possesses. Because Jesus spends his time in that crowd to look around for the woman. Her faith, it has been suggested, has been contrasted with the incredulity or even the scorn that his disciples express as Jesus searches the crowd, thick with people, for the one person who touched the edge of his robe and received healing. Because Jesus insists on looking around for this person. Out of this crowd of people so thick that many had undoubtedly at some point or another actually touched Jesus, brushing his arm or accidentally jostling his heel or stepping on his foot or treading on the hem of his cloak. But he searches the crowd intently for the one who had the faith to touch him to receive healing. And when the woman realizes that she can no longer hide in the crowd, she comes with emotion, trembling with fear, we read. Which, if we continue to pay attention to the way that Mark tells the story, we should read her fear more to the fact that she knew what had happened to her, which suggests that Mark understands her reaction as one of awe in response to the amazing power of Jesus. This woman's faith, her determination, has paid off. She's been healed from her disease. Jesus seeks out the woman, speaks with her, and tells her this: "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." This gives her dignity and respect. Jesus doesn't berate her for being out in the crowd or even for jumping the queue here. He doesn't tell her she should wait her turn. He doesn't get angry at her for not getting a line behind the sick little girl that he was on his way to see. Instead, he calls her daughter. And not just that, he says that her faith has healed her. Her faith has saved her. The disciples of Jesus all scoff at him here. And Jesus often tells his disciples in Mark's gospel that they are without faith, but Jesus honors the faith of this woman, however timid and small it is, and he calls her daughter, and she is healed. Everything that separates Jairus and this woman in terms of gender, health, power, wealth, status, Jesus reverses these things by elevating the woman and asking Jairus to wait. This woman who should never have been out in the crowds that day receives more than just healing from her physical ailment. She receives an encounter with Jesus, who gives her dignity, respect, and finds out that she too is part of the family. The woman may have wavered between faith and fear, and perhaps all the faith she could muster was tiny and small, but it is enough. After 12 long years, this tiny act of faith frees her from her ongoing suffering. Perhaps we should be the ones who strive to, even after everything that has gone on in our lives and all that we have suffered, to still muster the faith to come to Jesus. However, you might wonder if the disciples had a point as well. You see, the woman's action, her determination, the scrap of faith, however small, that she clings to in order to grab a hold of that garment in the crowd that day, has actually interrupted the healing that Jairus has asked for to Jesus' face before the woman was able to make her stealth move. And Jesus has actually stopped what he's doing. He stopped walking toward the sick little girl who's at death's door to find out about this woman. The fact that Jesus stops this important mission that he is on, Jesus has put Jairus on hold. However, we shouldn't overlook the fact that Jairus has also demonstrated a lot of faith that day. This woman may have had nothing to lose, but Jairus had everything to lose. And he puts all that he has, he bets it all on Jesus' ability to heal. And he has been interrupted in order that Jesus may find and talk to this seemingly nobody woman who should never have even been out that day, but dared to do so anyway. And in those precious moments where Jesus wastes his time with this woman, who is suffering, yes, but has been suffering for 12 years and surely could suffer an hour longer until Jesus has seen his daughter, well, his daughter is succumbing to her illness. Even as Jesus speaks with this woman, messengers are making their way to them and pushing through the crowd to find Jairus and deliver the news that it is too late. His daughter is dead. There is no more reason for Jairus to be here in the crowd pursuing his faith in Jesus, because what he has feared has indeed come to pass. As much as separates this woman from Jairus and his daughter, one thing has united them. They are both past all human help. And both of them have banked it all, whatever they had left, on Jesus. And this woman has been healed and made whole, and the daughter of Jairus has slipped away. While Jesus was still speaking, we read, some people come from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. Your daughter is dead, they said. Why bother the teacher anymore? Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, don't be afraid, just believe. Don't be afraid, just believe, Jesus says. The space between faith and fear has opened like a chasm in front of Jairus, in front of this man who has humbled himself in the first place to come and bow at Jesus' feet and to beg a favor of Jesus, when Jairus is the one who usually had favors asked of him. Jairus asked Jesus up front and to his face, and he even asked Jesus first. Jairus' need is urgent because a little girl's life hangs in the balance, and Jesus put his miracle on hold. He lets the woman who had a less urgent problem, who'd snuck up behind him rather than to his face, this woman who has no standing and no one to speak for her, she has jumped the queue. From Jairus' point of view, she has stolen his miracle. And Jesus stood there talking to her while his daughter died. And when this father and community leader, who is used to having everything under his control, hears the news that the worst has happened, Jesus tells him to choose faith over fear. And maybe that's what we need to hear today. Don't be afraid even when the worst has happened and the very thing you feared has come to pass. Jesus is asking quite a lot of Jairus here. He asks him to keep his faith even though his daughter has died. Jesus asked Jairus to keep on trusting him, even though Jesus seems to have repaid Jairus' faith by putting his sought-after miracle on hold to deal with someone else's seemingly less urgent problem. Could Jairus keep trusting Jesus, who, although he was his very last hope for his daughter, seems to have let the little girl down to care for someone who has snuck up behind him in a crowd? Could Jairus keep on trusting when the miracle that he sought after has occurred, but for someone else? Could I keep trusting? Could you? One writer says this: what do we believe in when we reach the end of our ropes? Many of us these days have a hard time believing in miracles. When life brings something so painful, so devastating that it feels like you've gone beyond what you can humanly endure, what then? But is there some way to face that kind of devastating loss without giving up our faith? I guess what I'm asking is, what can we believe in when it seems like we have nothing left to believe in? When we go through our own end-of-the-rope situations, can we believe that our life isn't over? Can we believe that although one chapter may be coming to a close, but as it does, it opens the way for another chapter to begin? Can we believe in the one who has carried us from the day of our birth and will continue to carry us all the days of our lives? Can we believe that God can and does bring something good from when our worst nightmare has come true? Can we believe that God is working in and through all the heartbreak and suffering in this world to bring new life? Somewhere between faith and fear is where our characters spent their lives today. One of them, after all that she has been through, chose to cling to the tiny seed of faith that she possessed, even after all the things that she suffered, and still went and touched Jesus' robe. And the other was asked to let his miracle wait until it seemed that all hope was gone, and to trust Jesus anyway. Somewhere between faith and fear, isn't that where we live our everyday lives? We want to trust in God, but this world brings trouble and suffering. Whether we have lost everything or it feels like we have it all together, every one of us has the chance of facing these leveling incidences where we're beyond all human help, where all of our resources are gone, and we have to decide whether our faith is really real or just an illusion that we cling to. The unnamed woman demonstrates the faith even after everything she suffered, and of Jairus is asked even more, if that's possible, to trust one more time when you've been forced to wait, when your nightmare comes true, and when it seems that your miracle has been given away to someone else. And both of these characters choose faith over fear. Unlike the disciples who display derision at Jesus, unlike the mourners gathered in the home of Jairus who scoff when Jesus suggests that his situation isn't as bad as everyone seems to think it is. Faith and fear. We live somewhere between these two extremes. And perhaps our stories can give us the courage to choose faith this week, however fleeting, however small, however weakly, however hopeless. And of course, you will notice that we have set before us the table of the Lord. Here at the foot of the cross is one other time when faith seems so very hopeless, when the situation was so very bleak that it seemed like nothing would ever be right again. And yet, in the face of the perfect love demonstrated at the cross and the perfect power that followed the cross, we can have the courage to choose faith. Would you pray with me as we go to the Lord's table today? Lord of healing, when someone in your world suffers, you suffer as well. We ask that you would restore your world and heal your children. Help us to choose faith over fear, even when we have endured more suffering than we think we can bear, even when it feels like we've been put on hold, even when all hope seems lost. And as we come to your table, Lord, we ask that you would gather us in, the lost and the lonely, the broken and breaking, the tired and the aching, who long for nourishment found at your feast. Gather us in, Lord, the done and the doubting, the wishing and wondering, the puzzled and pondering, who long for the company found at your feast. Gather us in, Lord, the proud and the pretentious, the sure and superior, the never inferior, who long for the leveling found at your feast. Gather us in, the bright and the bustling, the stirrers, the shakers, who long for the deeper joys found at your feast. Gather us in from corner or limelight, from mansion or campsite, from fears and obsession, from tears and depression, from untold excesses, from treasured successes, to meet, to eat, to be given a seat, to be joined to the vine, to become like the least, to be found at the feast. Gather us in, Lord. Amen.
This has been the Spiritual School Bus. Thank you for listening. For more Spiritual School Bus, visit www.pastormandy.com. This recording is copyright 2020 by Mandy Hecht and may only be copied or redistributed by express written permission. Thank you and have a blessed week.
Lord Jesus Christ, you have put your life in our hands.
So now we put our life into yours. Take us, renew us, and remake us. What we have been is past. What we shall be through you still awaits us. Lead us on. Take us with you. Amen. Go in peace.